From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA. On today's program, we focus on la salud, healthcare in the Latino community. The question of reform is sparking debate, but what does it mean for Latinos?
If everyone's in the pool, then the costs are spread over a larger population. Getting more Latinos in the pool actually would be a huge subsidy for baby boomers because Latinos pay in but don't utilize services and are pretty healthy, as a matter of fact.
Y el amor prohibido, the taboos of dating for the children of immigrants.
I think my boyfriend probably gets brownie points because he does speak Vietnamese and my parents can speak to him in a different language.
Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us.
This is news from Latino USA. I'm Angela Maldonado. What's being called the Three Amigos Summit was held in Guanajuato, Mexico this last week. President Barack Obama and Canada's Prime Minister Stephen Harper joined Mexican President Felipe Calderon in a series of discussions about trade, immigration, and the economy. So what was accomplished? According to Larry Burns, Executive Director for the Council on Hemispheric Affairs, not much.
Except, of course, the ultimate reality is that Canada, Mexico, and the United States couldn't be more important to each other because they have a huge amount of trade amongst themselves. And so if they're not operating in an effective, profitable manner, the entire global economy hurts.
Trade dominated a good deal of the talks, with Calderon wasting no time expressing his dislike of the imposed ban on Mexican trucks importing goods into the U.S. As a result, Mexico has raised tariffs against the U.S. because of the trucks, saying the ban goes against the NAFTA treaty. Canada's Harper discussed the Buy American provision found in the $787 billion U.S. stimulus package. Canada fears it will shut out Canadian companies. While the summit was more about bringing the leaders together to look into resolving issues, Burns said what is needed is real change.
Well, what has to be done, of course, is you need an economic revival. That is, there's nothing, no artificial stimulant is going to do this. You need a genuine economic revival. And although Mexico has not really benefited very much from the U.S. stimulation program, Mexico has its own stimulation program and has been pouring in hundreds of millions of dollars into that stimulation program. It's hoped that eventually a jumpstart will occur.
The three countries do depend on one another when it comes to trade. Burns says NAFTA has been beneficial to Canada, but it's the U.S.-Mexico relationship that shows how the countries affect each other.
Mexico, as we know, is going through a very difficult time right now. It's been particularly hard hit by the world economic slowdown. And that has been reflected, of course, also in the fact that the U.S. economy has slowed down. And since 85% of Mexico's output goes to the United States, if the United States is not enjoying economic good times, it's not buying from Mexico, and Mexico really begins to hurt.
At the summit, President Obama repeated his commitment to immigration reform, announcing he would work on getting measures passed in 2010. The economic crisis has invigorated the immigration debate. The two issues, Burns says, are closely tied.
People don't easily migrate to a foreign country. That includes Mexicans from Mexico. They come here out of economic desperation. And when the commodities were at a high price, you had a very significant downturn in migration to this country. Then when you began to have the economic downturn throughout the region, that's when people began to thinking about migrating. But in fact, if they did migrate, they would run into many Mexicans who were returning to Mexico because they couldn't make a living in the United States.
That was Larry Burns, Executive Director of the Council on Hemispheric Affairs, speaking on the recent Three Amigos Summit in Guanajuato, Mexico. Finally, Puerto Rican Broadway legend Chita Rivera received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Rivera was among 15 other recipients honored by President Barack Obama. The award is the nation's highest civilian honor and it recognizes accomplishments from politics to entertainment and everything in between. A sampling of recipients include Senator Edward Kennedy, actor Sidney Poitier, U.S. Supreme Court Judge Sandra Day O'Connor, and gay rights activist Harvey Milk. The 76-year-old Rivera holds 2 Tony Awards, and it was her role as Anita in the Broadway classic West Side Story that catapulted her to fame, as audiences went wild for her performance of the now iconic song America. I like the island Manhattan. Smoke on your pipe and put the thought in.
I like to be in America. Okay, by me in America. Everything free.
America. Performed by Rivera and the original cast of West Side Story for CBS Records in 1957. That's news from Latino USA. I'm Angela Maldonado. For more news alerts, visit us at latinousa.org.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Well, no one said it would be pretty or nice, but the debate over healthcare reform has devolved into an ugly and divisive shouting match. But wherever you stand, most people would agree that reform is necessary. This month, we'll be looking at the multifaceted topic of healthcare for Latinos. We say multifaceted because it would be a mistake to think that Latino healthcare is something of a monolithic topic. You have recent immigrants to the United States, and you have Latinos who are not immigrants at all. They're the people who have lived here in the United States since before it was the United States. So we begin our series by speaking with Dr. David Hayes Bautista. He's the director of the Center for the Study of Latino Health and Culture at UCLA. Dr. Hayes Bautista, welcome to Latino USA.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
So lay it out for us. What makes U.S. Latinos versus immigrants or undocumented Latinos different in terms of healthcare?
There are two major things that distinguish the U.S.-born Latinos from immigrant. Those born here have always greatly outnumbered the immigrants. So actually, that the average Latino is born in what's now the United States. U.S.-born Latinos obviously are eligible for programs. They are considered legally to be United States citizens with all the rights pertaining thereto. The second big piece, however, is that as we look at the health of Latinos, it turns out actually in many ways the very, very different Latino groups resemble one another in terms of epidemiology far more than they resemble any other group. For example, overall in the United States, Latinos are 30% less likely compared to non-Hispanic whites to die from heart disease, about 40% less likely to die from cancer. And there's only minor variation between groups, Latino groups on this, whether you're Mexican, Cuban, Puerto Rican, et cetera.
So let me stop you. Let me stop you there for a second, because yes. I know, Dr. Bautista, that this is what you've spent your life's work doing. So you have statistics like these and you can throw them out there. But I want to stop for a second because you're saying that U.S.-born Latinos have a 30% higher chance or risk of dying from heart disease or cancer than their white counterparts?
No, 30% less of heart disease, 40% less due to cancer. Actually lower.
How is that? Because I was expecting, that's why I had to clarify. I was like, what's that about?
This is called the Latino epidemiological paradox. You would expect Latinos to be in very poor health because Latinos generally have lower income, less education, less access to medical services compared to non-Hispanic whites. Normally, that leads to medical disasters. However, that's not true for Latinos. Latinos also have far lower death rates for the major causes of death, such as heart, cancer, and stroke, have actually about a 3 to 4 year longer life expectancy. These are very unexpected outcomes, but with a population of 48 million, these are very, very robust findings. We have to discover why is it that Latinos are so healthy in spite of having risk factors that would be considered very, very high.
So what is this this paradox? What's the answer that you can come up with at this point?
Well, the last place I'm going to look is genetics, because as Latinos, we are so genetically heterogeneous. And we are mestizos, by and large. We're a little bit of all of the above. That probably looking for a genetic explanation isn't, at least for me, that's not a place I would start. We have to look at culture. Latinos generally are very, very healthy, particularly when we look at chronic diseases such as heart, cancer, and stroke. Normally, we think that a population that is in poverty with low income is going to have high rates of drinking, smoking, and drug use. Well, it turns out Latinos overall have lower rates of drinking, smoking, drug use. However, if we look at the difference between those born in the U.S. from the immigrants, the U.S.-born do smoke more, do drink more, do use drug more, and their death rates are a little bit higher compared to the immigrants.
So what about diabetes? That's the other one that we hear a lot about. Are there surprising numbers there?
Diabetes is one of the two exceptions to the Latino epidemiological paradox. That is, for almost everything else, Latinos have a lower death rate compared to non-Hispanic white, except for diabetes. That's the one cause of death for which Latinos have a nearly 50 to 100% higher death rate compared to non-Hispanic white.
Now, those are huge numbers at your time. 50 to 100% more deaths from diabetes?
In terms of rate. Now, remember, the number one cause of death in the United States is heart disease. Diabetes is about the number seven. So we have a higher rate, but for a rarer event.
So here's your 90 seconds, Dr. Hayes Bautista, to tell what you think needs to happen with health care reform to the president. What would you say to him about what needs to happen?
Health insurance works best when everyone is in the pool. Getting more Latinos in the pool actually would be a huge subsidy for baby boomers, because Latinos pay in but don't utilize services and are pretty healthy, as a matter of fact. The public programs that we have seem to work pretty well. Medicare has not driven private health insurance out of business in the senior market. In fact, private health insurance has worked with Medicare to offer extended and expanded plans. It works perfectly well. We can have public and private programs partnering. They do in the Medicare world. So that we simply need to expand what we provide to particular groups, to seniors and to the veterans, to everybody, and that will actually reduce the cost for everybody, and it puts us on par with the rest of the world. We have got to get competitive with the rest of the world, and healthcare costs could choke us off from being competitive.
Dr. Hayes Bautista, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us.
My pleasure.
Dr. David Hayes Bautista is the director of the Center for the Study of Latino Health and Culture at UCLA. Next week, we'll continue our series looking at the special challenges that immigrants face in our healthcare system. We also want to hear from you. Our listener line is 800-535-5533. Our email address is lusa@npr.org. When people come to the United States, as they have for centuries, often their first stop, New York City, becomes their home. Ellis Island has given way to JFK as the port of entry. The airport is in Queens, which is home to immigrants from hundreds of countries around the globe. And some of those teenage immigrants attend the International High School, a special college preparatory school for kids with limited English skills who've been in the U.S. for less than 4 years. One of International High School's popular electives is the theater program. Jeff London has our story.
Just trying to get teenagers from 15 different countries on stage to rehearse is a little like wrangling cats.
So can everybody just drop your bags, whatever you have, and come up on stage, and we'll just make a circle?
These kids come from all over.
My name is Stephanie. I'm from Haiti.
Hey, my name is Belkis. I'm from West Africa, Cote d'Ivoire. I've been in the country for 2.5.
My name is Tenzin Kasa, and I'm from Nepal, and I live in Queens.
My name is Esther Hernandez, and I'm from Honduras, and I live in Queens.
What's brought them together is a theater program called Cross-Cultural Dialogue Through the Arts.
Are you ready? 5, 6, 7, go!
Judith Sloan, an oral historian and theater artist, has been leading the program for the past decade.
All the kids come from being displaced. Many come from war. Many come from having stepped over dead bodies. We know that. We realize that a lot of the process is about transforming trauma into art.
My name is Hadil, and I'm from Iraq, and I'm 15, almost getting 16 years old.
The shy, soft-spoken teenager has had a lot of trauma in her young life. She grew up in Baghdad, and her father was a translator for the United States government.
So he got a shot in his face, and my uncle, he died. They killed him. And, they won't took me for money.
Take a deal and demand ransom. But the kidnapping attempt didn't succeed. Hadil says for most of her life, she's lived out of a suitcase.
Well, first time we went to Jordan, then Turkey. Then we came back to Jordan, Iraq. Then we went to Syria, then Jordan. Then we came here. And when we was in Iraq, we moved to many places.
She says her father, who's had 17 operations on his face, is doing better and working for the United Nations. Hadil's family now lives in a two-bedroom apartment in Queens, and she's unpacked her suitcase.
I feel safe here. I feel this is my country. I love my country too, but that's, you know, the life.
My father wanted a better life for us.
My grandmother wanna better house.
We have to leave the rubber stick over.
No!
Our only choice was to get out.
We left the city for the country.
We left the city for the desert.
Sometimes I wonder how we made it.
We take but so desperate.
Judith Sloan says the theater piece, which is a kind of collective poem with musical interludes, was developed by having the kids share their stories to one another.
We use interviewing. We sit there and actually go around the room and do storytelling, and we ask, what was it like when you first came? Can you describe it more?
My name is Paola. I'm from Dominican Republic, and I am 15 years old.
Paola's story may not be as filled with life and death as Nadil's, but she's had her share of heartache. Her father moved to the States 7 years ago and left the family behind.
He was here just to work and stuff. And that was like kind of hard because I really, really love my father. And the time when he was there, we had a lot of fun. And the day that he left, I was like so like feeling horrible and stuff.
She's feeling better now. This past year, the family reunited in Queens, and she's been embracing her new life. Paula's as gregarious as Hadil is reticent, but the two have become close friends on stage and off. And she says they've created their own cross-cultural dialogue.
She's always like teaching me some words, and I'm teaching her some words. So for me, it's like very, very funny because sometimes I am at my house and my father asked me something and I say, Habibi, I'm fine. And he asked me, what means Habibi? I'm like, yeah, Habibi means like sweetie, like something like that. Yeah. And for me, it's very, very cool to meet her.
And Hadil says for both of them, acting has been very, very cool too.
I like theater. I like to act. Those lines that I took, I feel it, you know. I feel like this is what inside my heart.
One of the lines Hadil speaks is, my homeland supreme, don't forget me. And what's inside her heart blossoms on stage.
My homeland supreme, don't forget me.
My new life says, come and get me.
Come and get me.
My dreams are now in English.
My native tongue is slipping away.
For Latino USA, I'm Jeff London in New York.
In a minute, Amor Prohibido. What are the taboos of dating outside the community for the children of immigrants? That's coming up on Latino USA. Quédense con nosotros. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. For some immigrants and their children, falling in love with someone outside their ethnic or national group can be a stepping stone to assimilation. But for others, it can feel like a perilous leap. As part of our continuing series on immigrants and their lives, NPR's Richard Gonzalez takes a look at the dating and marriage preferences of second-generation Americans and why many are choosing more culturally comfortable partners.
Sproul Plaza at the University of California, Berkeley is a global crossroads. Students come from all over the country and the world, white, Asian, black, and Latino. They mingle and often date.
Today we will talk about marriage, interracial marriage, and multiraciality.
Sociologist Keiko Yamanaka is teaching a course on the experience of Asian American women. All of her students are children of Asian immigrants, and Yamanaka talks about the issues they may face meeting their parents' expectations of marriage.
And Asian marriage is often decided based on an obligation to the family. Whereas in America, you choose the partner based on your interests.
But U.S. Census data suggests a more complicated picture. At a time when interracial marriages between black and white Americans are increasing, there's an opposite trend among the children of immigrants. Since the 1990s, fewer Asians and Latinos are marrying people of other groups.
My name is Jessica Nim, and I am from Sacramento, California.
Nim is the first in her extended family to leave home to study here at UC Berkeley. Her parents are ethnic Chinese from Vietnam, but she's quick to say she's thoroughly Americanized. In high school, Nim dated, in her words, white and Hispanic. But her current boyfriend is Asian, and she and her family are more comfortable.
I think my boyfriend probably gets brownie points because he does speak Vietnamese, and my parents can speak to him in a different language. So I think my parents are much more accepting. I've definitely gotten a better response with a Vietnamese guy than, for example, a white guy or a Hispanic guy, you know.
One of Nim's friends tells a different story about the influence of mom and dad on who she dates.
Well, I'm Elaine. Elaine Lee, L-Y, not L-E-E.
Lee is a senior, art major. Her parents are also ethnic Chinese from Vietnam who live in a poor neighborhood just north of Berkeley. Her closest friends, including her boyfriend, are Asian American. But he is Mien, refugees from the Laotian Highlands, and that's the issue for her parents.
Somehow they come to me and say, how come you didn't find a Chinese lawyer or something?
Still, Lee says she can't imagine not dating an Asian guy.
The reason why I love my boyfriend is because he understands what I'm going through, and to me, I feel like values are more important. Because he respects my parents, I love him for that.
Family values are also important to UC Berkeley senior Salvador Limon. He was born in the Mexican state of Jalisco and raised in East Los Angeles. At Berkeley, he says he's dated women of all backgrounds.
I'm not gonna judge you based on your ethnicity. My family never brought me up to like think in a racist manner.
Still, Limon says his family has always exerted an influence on who he's dated.
One time in high school, I was dating a Latina girl who didn't speak Spanish. Her family wasn't, they were like second generation already. And to hear my mom and dad saying that this girl has no values, this girl comes from a dysfunctional family, you should be careful. That was part of the reason why I didn't let go of her.
Like many children of immigrants, Limon is balancing being open to relationships with all ethnicities while at the same time maintaining their culture and tradition.
Who I want to marry? I want to marry a Latino girl. Why? Because I'm very proud to say I'm from Jalisco, and because I do go often, I see the girls and they're pretty and you know, and it reminds me of like where I was from. So marrying a Jalisciense, It's like the other me.
Such feelings don't surprise Daniel Lichter. He's a Cornell sociologist who studies interracial marriage patterns. He says America's growing immigrant population gives children of immigrants more choices when picking a partner.
The extent to which there is a large influx of immigrants, it creates a ready market, a ready marriage market for native-born minority groups, including Hispanics and Asians, to marry co-ethnics, that is, other Asians and other Hispanics.
Lichter says this trend may reinforce some cultural boundaries and traditions, but there's no way of knowing whether this is a short-term shift or the beginning of a long-term pattern.
Double mocha?
Here.
Hi.
Are you gonna have milk?
Across the bay from Berkeley at San Francisco State University, students grab coffee before darting off to class. Many are children of immigrants. 21-year-old Andres Rico is a junior journalism major. His parents are from El Salvador. His current girlfriend was born in Spain.
It's the first time I've dated someone that I can speak Spanish to because, I don't know, it's kind of a comfort zone. It's refreshing, I guess, because I feel like I can express a side that I couldn't before just because of a language barrier.
Senior Suzanne Salazar says she's never thought much about the race or ethnicity of the guys she's dated. That is, until she brought home a man whose parents are from Guatemala.
And he speaks Spanish, and that was one of the first things that my father, like, mentioned when I told him I was in a relationship. He was like, oh, he speaks Spanish. That's great, finally. I mean, he's never mentioned anything about race, but, you know, it is an issue for him, and being that we have a great relationship, it's something that I never thought I would take into consideration, but I am now.
Several students told us that race, ethnicity, or their parents' preferences had no bearing on who they dated or planned to marry. Noemi Mena's family fled El Salvador during the 1980s. She says she shocked her family when she started dating her fiancé, a young man whose family is from England.
Like, he grew up in a Catholic family as well. I grew up, religion is just something that, like, it's really strong for me, so I like the fact that he's Catholic too, and I'm Catholic, so race has nothing to do with it.
Or take the case of Angela DeClaro. She's a 22-year-old senior. Her parents are from the Philippines.
No, I've never dated a Filipino guy ever, nor have I really been attracted to one. Like I said in class, I'm 5'10", so I've always been tall, so, you know, find me a guy, a Filipino guy who's 5'10". I mean, and then when I wear heels, I'm like 6'1", so that's even more difficult.
DeClaro dated a Latino man for 2.5 years, despite the fact that neither her parents nor his approved of their relationship.
So I was just like one of those forbidden love stories. And I think that's why, like, I was so adamant about, like, this has got to work, this has got to work, because they were so against it. But
did it work?
No, that's why he's my ex-boyfriend. And, like, I hate to admit this, but my parents were definitely right. But I think it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't about ethnicity. It was just, like, he just wasn't right for me.
DeClaro smiles, shakes her head, and says, I'm Americanized, but my parents' traditions are still so strong. For Latino USA, I'm Richard Gonzalez.
And for this week, this has been Latino USA. Thanks for listening. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the University of Texas at Austin, the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio, and the Marguerite Casey Foundation. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org, and the George Lucas Educational Foundation and Edutopia, your source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org, and by Lumber Liquidators, hardwood flooring direct from the mill. Information at 1-800-HARDWOOD or lumberliquidators.com. This is NPR. National Public Radio.